Lessons that I've learned from centenarians. That's folks that are over 100 years old. Got to thinking about it and I thought, you know, I ought to pass these on while I can still remember it and maybe it will be a benefit to somebody else. I count very strongly the blessing of the people that God puts in my life. And I've been blessed. There's six that I'll mention this morning, six individuals that I've known very personally that I was very much impacted by their example and by their life, and all of them live to be over 100 years of age. Interesting, when I begin to think about the lessons that I learned from them, there's some things that are very similar with all of them. And you'll pick up on that here shortly. Elder Robbins at Salisbury tells a story about an old brother at the church in North Carolina. I think his name was Brother Hopper, and he was past 100 years of age, and his job was to go around and pick up the elderly sisters and bring them to church. And he was still doing that at 100 years of age, and he had a car full, I think, three elderly sisters that he would pick up and bring to church. And one Sunday morning, they pulled up in the church parking lot, and nobody got out. And so finally, they did. And when they came inside, somebody asked one of the elderly sisters, said, "What took y'all so long to get out?" And they said, "We were waiting on Brother Hopper to open the door for us." So at 100 years old, I guess you still need to be exercising that. The first time I met somebody that was 100 years old, I was 15 years old, and I was at my pastor's house, Elder George Johnson, and he lived on a farm, and I'd never even met anyone, seen anyone that I knew of that was 100 years old. And in the conversation, he told me, he said, "Well, the neighbor down the street, we rent her farm, and she is 105 years old." And I said, "Would it be possible to meet her? I'd never met anyone that was that old." And he picked up the phone and called, and we went down and met her. Her husband had passed away. Her daughter's husband had passed away, and her daughter lived with her. Her daughter, the sister, she was actually a member of another Primitive Baptist church in Lubbock, which was not that large. There were four different factions of Primitive Baptist. Thank goodness they've all come together now, and there's one faction of Primitive Baptist. But there were four different factions of Primitive Baptist. And she was a member of another Primitive Baptist church, she and her daughter. And so we went up and we met with her, and when we went into the house, it was like stepping back in time. Back into the 20s or 30s. One of the things that struck me when we walked in is that they had a big TV, and when one would go out, they would just put another one on top of it, and there were three televisions sitting there with only one of them that were working. They worked on a farm. They lived on a farm. The mother was 18 when her daughter was born, so the daughter was 87, the mother was 105, and they both looked like they were ancient. They really did. And I mean, I'm 15 years old, and that's how it stuck in my mind. And I remember that they continued to raise their garden, they continued to grow their food, they continued to put up their food and things like that, even at that age. And several funny stories. I began to visit them, and they wanted to go buy some new dresses. Probably hadn't had new dresses in 25 years, and they wanted to go to Kmart. Well, if you can imagine, I had a little Toyota Corolla, and the wheelchair would stick out the back. We couldn't close the trunk, and here I'm driving a 105-year-old and an 87-year-old to Kmart. And it was quite an experience. Then I started taking them to church, and I enjoyed the blessings of being able to fellowship with them. One story went that they were at the bank. The daughter was in line at the bank at the teller, and they had an old 55 Buick Special, black Buick Special, great big old car. The daughter was standing in line. They wore these old time bonnets, kind of like your daughter had the other day, except really, really old fashioned, the old time bonnets. And this man went up to the daughter who was standing in line and said, "I'm just intrigued by this bonnet that you have, that you're wearing," and said, I'm just amazed about that. Where did you get it, or did you make it, or what happened?" And the daughter turned to the gentleman and she said, "If you think this one's something, you ought to see the one my mother's wearing out in the car." He went out and visited with the 105-year-old as well. But they lived together, they took care of each other, and they were a blessing to each other. And the last time that I went to see them, the mother's health had declined, Sister Martha Knowles, 110 years of age, that she was now confined to the bed. The daughter had fallen and broken her hip, and they had some outside care come in a little bit. But the last vision that I picture in my mind, they didn't have any grandchildren, didn't have any great-grandchildren, was going in to visit and seeing a 92-year-old daughter in her wheelchair next to the side of her mother's bed feeding her 110-year-old mother. I can see that in my mind just as clear as it could possibly be. I never heard the daughter complain about the care that she made for her mother, and I never heard the mother complain about the situation that she was in. And it was stamped into my mind. And the first thing that came to mind was this. I was about 20 years old at the time. I thought to myself, I've learned a lesson here, that I personally don't have any excuse or reason not to care for my parents. If a 92-year-old can do it, then I certainly can. So when I think of Sister Martha Knowles and Sister Melissa Peake, I think of Galatians chapter 6, where it says that children are to obey their parents in the Lord, and that you're to honor your father and mother, and that there's two things that will go along with that. Number one, that it will go well with you. Doesn't mean that it's going to go perfect, but what it simply means is going to go a little better than average. That's what it means. It means you're not going to have the deep valleys that you would have without that. And he says there's two promises, that it will go well with you and that your days will be long upon the earth. Now, my pastor preached the message for the old Sister Knowles when she died, and the daughter who he went to speak to after the service, Sister Peake, was there, and she was 92, and she said, "Elder Johnson," she said, "I wouldn't take anything in the world for taking care of my mother," but she said, "there's no telling how many years it's taken off my life doing it." Well, she lived to be 92 or 99 herself. But I think about the example of honoring your father and your mother, and that's stamped into my mind. The second one that I'll mention to you, Mamie Matilda Bailey Olson. That was a great aunt of mine. I'd been to Oklahoma City to a business meeting that we had, and I was driving back home to Lubbock, and I stopped in Chickasha, Oklahoma. It's an Indian name, and it's just south of Oklahoma City. And I looked up my aunt who lived in a nursing home there. Her children had died. And I went to visit her, and she was in her late 90s at the time. And the situation that I found was just terrible. She didn't have any children, didn't have any family. She wanted me to write something down, and when I opened the drawer by the nightstand, roaches came out from around the side. When I began to look closer, that was the situation that her room was in. And I found that the sheets weren't clean, the clothes weren't clean. It was a horrible situation. I went on home, and I was about 20 at the time, 22. And I'd wake up at night thinking about the situation that she was in. So I went to the local nursing home there in Lubbock, Texas, never been there before, and I met with the director there, and I told her my situation. I said, how in the world could I move her here? At least somebody could at least check on her. And she told me the steps, and I had no idea what I was getting involved in at all, but I knew that anything would probably improve her situation. And so made arrangements. I had a good friend that was a chiropractor. We borrowed a van. We put a mattress in the back of it. I went to Oklahoma, to Chickasha, Oklahoma. We loaded her up in the back of that van. She laid down the whole way and made the 8-hour trip to Lubbock, Texas. And we put her in a home there in Lubbock. I would visit her several times a week, and I got to know her pretty well. She grew up with her dad passing away when she was 2 years old. Died from an appendicitis attack. My granddad, who was her brother, was 6 weeks old. Left their mother with 6 children to raise and no income. And her mother raised her and 5 other children all by herself back in the early 1900s. She never complained. She was always content. But one thing that stood out to me that I was amazed about is that she never worried. I don't know where I got my worry from, but it wasn't from her. She never worried. And some of the scriptures tell us that we're to not let our hearts be troubled. We're not to be anxious for nothing. That we're to realize that it really is in the hands of the Lord. And we're to remind ourselves that the battle is the Lord's. And so when I think of my Aunt Mamie, I'm reminded and I rejoice to know that she didn't set an example of worrying all the time. And it didn't really change a lot of things when I worry, but I'm still more prone to do it. There's several sayings that a lot of people waste today because either we live in regrets or we live full of worry. We're worrying about, we're living in the regrets of yesterday, or we're worrying about tomorrow. And then the blessing of the day will be removed from us because we spend our time worrying. And I heard someone say that you can't worry and pray at the same time. Now, I kind of think you can a little bit, but if you pray hard enough and if you pray long enough, the Lord may help you to overcome worry. Anybody here that worries? I'm so glad to know misery loves company. I'm glad to know that I'm not the only one that worries. But it's a blessing when we meet somebody that their life's not given to worry. In fact, some folks that you might know, might meet, they may worry if they don't have something to worry about because they're so prone to worry. Just think you have to be in that mindset to worry. Well, when I think of my dear Aunt Mamie, she was not given to worry. She lived to be 102. She outlived her family. She outlived her friends. She outlived her health. She outlived all of those things, but she didn't worry about it. She trusted in the Lord. And so that's a great blessing for me. The next one that I'll mention that was such a blessing, Elder Compton. Elder Compton has been a blessing. He's the first person that I met when I moved to Maryland back in when I was visiting Maryland back in the early 1990s, my pastor knew him, and I went to his house, and he and Sister Compton made a meal, and we had a wonderful time of fellowship, and then I would visit the Columbia Church and visit Mount Carmel Church, and ended up just really, the Lord knit our hearts together. Many of you knew Elder Compton. The first two you didn't know, but the next ones that I'll mention, most of them you will know. Elder Compton's favorite verse was Ephesians 4:32, "And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you." Isn't that a great verse? I don't know if it's on his tombstone, but it probably ought to be. What a wonderful verse. He said, "Be ye kind one to another." I mean, that's a really good philosophy to live by. Elder Compton lived by that philosophy. Tender-hearted. He said, "Forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you." What a great blessing that is. Here's some verses that I think of when I think of Elder Compton. Grace, you remember Elder Compton real well. Your family was so much involved in his care. He came to live in my home for 2 weeks and ended up living there about 2 years. And it was after he was 100 years old. Brother Charles, your mother did a wonderful job. Sister Chrissy, Sister Geraldine Lee did a wonderful job caring for Elder Compton. He was depressed after his wife of 76 years had passed away, and they began to encourage him, nursing back to health. And after he was 100 years old, he recovered. He was able to preach again. He was able to travel again. He preached in 21 different churches in 17 different states after he was 100 years old. In fact, one day he preached in 3 different states. He preached in Maryland. There was an afternoon service in Pennsylvania. And there was an evening service in New Jersey. Preached in 3 different states, 101 years old. Pretty remarkable. So when I think of Elder Compton, I think of the verse that we mentioned about being kind and tenderhearted and forgiving. But I also run over to Matthew, and I think of the verse in Matthew where it tells us that we're to seek first the kingdom of God. It was a priority in the life of Elder Compton, and he wanted to be used in the service of the Lord as long as he lived. In fact, Brother Charles, your brother would remember this. The last few messages that he preached here at Mount Carmel, he preached out of the last chapter of the book of Matthew, and he preached about the power of God. And he said, "You know, I've begun to be able to see the power of God in everything I see." He said, "Even in the grass of the field, I can see the power of God. I can see the power of God in the sun and the moon and the stars and holding this earth together." He said, "You look all around." He said, "God, who created all things, also upholds all things." And he said, "I can see the power of God." And it was almost as if there was an urgency that he had to deliver those messages. And then God called him home. What a wonderful blessing that was. "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness." Another one. "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God." Now, I want to just share this experience. Elder Compton told this experience. I may or may not have told you. If I have, please forgive me. Elder Compton told this one experience. He said, "I believe in seeking first the kingdom of God and his righteousness." He said, "I didn't always do that." He said, "There was a time that I thought that he grew up in North Carolina in a log cabin with a dirt floor, second grade education. His wife taught him how to read. He ended up taking care of the clocks in the Capitol and the White House, ended up being a craftsman, self-taught, making clocks himself. He ended up doing all those things, and he did it with a second grade education and with his wife teaching him how to read. Here's one example that Elder Compton shared. He said, "I thought I had to work 7 days a week. Now, I believe that sometimes you may be called to do that, but generally not. And if you are, you ought to be praying God will open a door to where you don't have to, if you are." He said, "I learned early on that when I went to work in 6 days a week instead of 7 days a week," he says, "what I made in 6 days a week went a whole lot further than what I made in 7 days a week." He said, "I could get by on less. The tires lasted longer on the car. The shoes lasted longer on the children." He said, "It was amazing how much better we could get by working 6 days a week rather than 7 days a week, things went so much better. He said, I was farming a little patch farm outside Washington, D.C. that we had bought for $100 an acre. Bought 100 acres for, I think, $100 an acre, or I believe that was the size of it. And he said, I was growing grass and on the field, and he ended up, they supplied grass sod for Arlington Cemetery. And he said, this little patch farm that we had, because we'd grown up on a farm, we wanted to raise vegetables and have a garden and just be outdoors. And so we bought this at the edge of town. He said, this man stopped by one Friday afternoon and he said, sir, I want to buy a little corner piece of this ground. And he said, this was back in the 60s. He said, I'm willing to give you $100,000 for a little piece. No, I'm willing to give you $90,000 for this little piece of, this corner piece of ground. Elder Compton said, I thought that man didn't know what he was talking about, because he said, I didn't pay but $10,000 for the whole farm. And all he wanted was just a little, he said, almost like a postage stamp piece for the farm. Elder Compton said, there was things going on that I didn't know about. He says, I found out later that they just announced that they were going to put Dulles Airport in right next door to me. He said, we had a chain link fence that separated us from Dulles Airport. And he said, I found out later that this man wanted this little piece of ground for a 7-Eleven to put in. And he said, I told the man, it was a Friday afternoon, he says, I told him, I really didn't have time to think about it or talk about it right now. I've got something more important. And the man said, sir, I have my checkbook right here. What's more important than making money? Elder Compton said, he asked me, so I just thought I'd tell him. I've got a church meeting I'm going to. He said the man couldn't even relate to what he was talking about, but he said, that's far more important to me than hearing you out on a transaction that you're offering. He said the man just was perplexed. He got in his car and he drove off. Elder Compton said, I went to the church meeting. It's a weekend church meeting. And he says, I didn't want my mind clouded by that transaction. I didn't want to be thinking about it. He said, I went on to the church meeting. He said, the next Monday, the man came back. He had his checkbook again. He said, all right. He says, I get it. You're just not satisfied with the price. I'll give you $100,000. Elder Compton said, I'd have been happy with the $90,000. But he said, God gave me an extra $10,000 because he blessed me in honoring him to put the church meeting first. Elder Compton was, he wanted to be helpful. He liked to restore old church buildings, even up into his 90s. And he was very, very active, even still drove up until around 100, and was just very with it mentally and physically. Brother Danny, would you hand me this? This is a prop for the service. I'll hand it back to you in just a second. So I asked Elder Compton, who would plane the wood from trees, I said, I want the first clock that you make after you turn 100 years old. This is it. He was 100 years old when he made this right here. What a craftsman. He could have said, you know, my wife has died. I'm old. I'm pitching in the towel. But he said, I still want to be productive. I still want to help with the Lord's church. I still want to be an encouragement to people. He did marriage counseling until he was 102 years of age. And when I think of Brother Compton, I think about these blessings that he put the Lord first. So when I say that some of these lessons I've learned, you are very much like the people that you're around. And I thank God for sending me these 100-year-old folks that have lived by these examples. I, as I was jotting down the notes and the thoughts. I couldn't get it on one page, and I began to put it on two, and then I thought, well, I shouldn't be surprised. It's a total of 600 years of life. It's not likely that it would fit on a couple of pages. But what a blessing that God has put it in those old folks to share with us, that we can learn that it'll impact our life and that our life will be different. I think of these things when situations come my way. I think of the example that they set, and it makes a difference in my life. It really does. The next one I'll share. All of you knew her, and I've got to speed up because we're getting down. Most everybody knew Sister Barbara Dixon. Now, you may be saying, well, she didn't make it to 100 years of age. She almost did. She is 99 and 9 months. And she wanted to live to be 100 so bad, and it became apparent that she wasn't quite going to make it. So they had a big party for her at the nursing home to celebrate her 100th birthday so she would think she lived to be 100 years old. And we went up there, and this is what I told her. And Corbin, your dad is the one that gave us this thought right here. He said, you go up there and you tell her she is 100 years old. Because you're starting with conception, not birth. And there was life at conception. And so you go tell her she's 100 years old and she made it to 100. And I tell you, that old sister's just happy as she could be. She was waiting to go on until she made it to 100. And when she found out she was 100, she was ready to go. Now, everybody that remembers Sister Barbara, she was about the size of Carla, except stooped over. Just little bitty tiny. And her husband was like Goliath. You remember last week? Brother Dixon, in his prime, I'm sure Brother Farrington knew him. He's probably 6'5", 6'6", great big stocky man, and this little bitty tiny lady. Well, when his health began to fail, he was on dialysis 3 times a week, and the ambulance would come. Sister Lee knows this. She was there, and Brother Tom overseeing the care. The ambulance would come to his house 3 times a week and would pick him up and take him to dialysis. When it got to where he couldn't walk, Sister Barbara ordered a hospital bed in their little bungalow house and put the hospital bed right in the middle of the living room so he could see her in the kitchen. He could see her in the living room. He could see her, and as long as he could see her moving around, he was just as happy and content as he could possibly be. She cared for him, this little 95-year-old lady, caring for this giant of a man in her hospital bed there in the middle of her living room. And I thought, what a tremendous example that she is. But she said something to me. And when Sister Barbara talked, you listened. She wanted, and if she didn't think you heard her, she'd repeat it. So you better listen the first time. And she'd have little tidbits of lessons that she would give. And she looked at me, about 98 years old, 99. She looked at me and she pointed her finger at me, and I can just see it just as clear as if it was yesterday. And she said, Elder Lloyd, remember this. Sometimes the best words said are the ones left unsaid. You know what? That's helped me a whole lot. I've thought about it. I don't always use it, but I always think about it, and I try to. Now, why is that so important? When I think about Sister Barbara, I think about the example she was in caring for her husband. But I can run over to James, and I can see where we're given instruction about not so much. There's much instruction given about what we do say. But here, James in James chapter 3 talks about what we don't say, or directing our tongue. And he says that we can take bits and put them in the mouths of horses, and we can direct a horse to go in one way or another. We can take a small helm of the ship, and with the rudder, we can direct an entire ship. But he says we don't have the power to tame this little instrument called the tongue? So when I think of Sister Barbara, I'm reminded of sometimes the words that I say, maybe I should have left them unsaid. Now, one of the examples that I remember from Brother Don Richards when he preached here, great lesson that he preached here. He said, sometimes you say something and you wish you could take it back. Anybody ever been there? I mean, as soon as you say it, you think, boy, I wish I could take that back. He said, it's about like this. When you squeeze some toothpaste out on the toothbrush and you get too much toothpaste on the toothbrush, you ever try to put it back in the tube? You just can't get it in there. You make a bigger mess. And he says, that's the way it is. When we say something that we shouldn't say, we can't take it back. I think of Sister Barbara when she would remind us of that. The next one that I'll mention. Corbin, your dad's involved in this one as well. He sent me a link to a news story, and this was about 3-4 years ago, and it was to another 100-plus-year-old. In fact, it was to the oldest barber in the world. And so I looked at the link, I looked at the site, and I saw that his barbershop was in New Windsor, New York, an hour and a half from New York City. And so Brother Danny and I were at the church meeting in New York, and I said, what do you think about going to get a haircut? He said, I'm all in. What's the deal? And I showed Brother Danny the video of this 107-year-old still working every day. And so after the church meeting, Brother Danny and I head to New Windsor, New York, and we pulled up, and you couldn't help but recognize who the 107-year-old was. He was standing there working. You could see in this big picture window. And we ended up going back a few times and talking to him and getting to visit with him. And he would talk about the blessings of the Lord. He would go every day to visit his wife's grave and pray at his wife's grave. He and his wife had been married 70-some-odd years. And he didn't even wear glasses. I asked him, I said, do you not wear glasses? He said, glasses are for old folks. Here he is, 107. It was a blessing to be able to talk to him. He said that when he started, he said, my family needed some help. And he said, I went to work cutting hair at 10 years old. He said haircuts were 10 cents. It cost 10 cents to get a haircut. But he said, my family needed help. And he said, there's a bunch of children. And he said, so I've been cutting hair ever since I was 10 years old. He was 107 at the time. I think maybe Brother Danny did as well. I talked to the shop owner. She said, you know something about Anthony? Anthony Mancinelli was his name. She said, you know something about Anthony that's different from all the rest of the employees? She said, he never calls out. She said, in fact, we'll look over at the rest of the employees and they're on their telephones. And Anthony's sitting there steadily cutting hair, sweeping the floor, steady as he could be. He said, I changed barbershops at 105 because he says I wasn't getting enough hours. And he said, I wanted enough hours. And he said, so I changed barbershops so I could get enough hours. There is clearly a pandemic that we're experiencing in America today that young folks are not taught to work. They're not taught the responsibility of work. You know, the mindset that we have today is, what can I get out of it? What can I get for what I do? I interview a lot of people. We have a lot of employees, and I interview a lot of people. And the first question that people generally ask are, what are the benefits? Or how much vacation? Or things like, what can I get out of it? Rather than, what can I give? Elder Compton said, I came up when there were no jobs around. He said, I came up in the Depression. And he said, I was determined to get a job. And he said, I went to the first place that I went to. He said, I told the man I needed a job. And he said, young man, I can't even pay the employees I have, much less hire somebody else. And Elder Compton said, sir, I'm willing to work for you 1 week for free just to see if I qualify. And if I qualify, I would appreciate anything you give me. Elder Compton said, I thought if he gave me anything, it was more than what I had. I didn't have anything to lose. Did you know you take that mindset, you can go get a job just about anywhere? You sure can. It'll work. But there's something else that we're missing today. And it's not just young folks. It's other folks as well. God has called us to work, to provide for our families. In fact, he says that somebody that doesn't work is worse than an infidel. That simply means an unbeliever. And he goes on to say that a person that won't work ought not to eat. Now, I don't know about you, but I kind of like to eat. I'm going to sign up for the next meal. I am. But he says that somebody doesn't work, they ought not to eat. Well, do you know that if you don't work and you don't eat, you'll probably decide pretty quick that you want to work. I have good friends that own several restaurants around the Bayou in Haverty Grace, Mamie's in Aberdeen. You can tell I don't miss out on any meals, all these restaurants. None of them can get enough help because people simply don't want to work. And people are being paid to stay at home. And they don't have the incentive to work. There's two things. God will bless you if you work. If you need money, you can go get it through working. You sure can. But there's also another blessing that you'll receive as well. And Anthony Mancinelli had this. And it's a disservice to young people that are not taught this when they're young. There is a great satisfaction in just simply doing a good job. My mother taught me at an early age. She says, you need to make sure that when you finish something, it was a little bit better than when you started. That's the mindset you ought to have. If you do a good job, there's a great satisfaction that's even above what you can earn through money. Because of the fall in the garden, because of Eve and Adam and partaking of the fruit, we have the curse that's upon us that we're going to earn the living that we have by the sweat of our brow. We are. And that's just how it is. There's a lot of things that I've done that I didn't really enjoy doing. Anybody, do you always enjoy everything you do? I mean, sometimes we have to do things we don't really enjoy. It's kind of like this. There were some things even when I had my grandmother at home, and I would think oftentimes about Sister Knowles and Sister Peak. And the last 2 years, my grandmother was bedfast in the bed. And I tell you, you learn to do things that you didn't think you could do. You really do. And oftentimes, if there's something that I really don't enjoy doing, this is how I think about it. I don't like having a flat tire. But if I have a flat tire, I'm going to get out and change it as quick as I can so I can get on down the road. If there's something that we're just not real excited about doing, just treat it like it's a flat tire, get it changed, and move on down the road. Anthony Mancinelli set an example, even into old age. Brother Danny and I went back when he turned 108. After we got a haircut, we took Anthony. Danny said, I'm thinking about asking to give me a shave as well. I said, there is no way I'm going to have a 108-year-old give me a shave. We took him out to an Italian dinner. He's a little Italian fella. Before we took him out, he said, I need to run home first. He went home and he put on a suit and tie, came back with his 83-year-old son, 57-year-old daughter, and we had a wonderful visit. By the way, he was still driving at 107 years of age. We saw him. We were his last customers. We saw him walk out. I said, "I've got to see this." We parked across the street. He said, Brother Danny said, "You're stalking him." I said, "This is a once in a lifetime. I've got to see if this man can drive." He got in the car, and with a measure of haste, he pulled out of that parking lot. I couldn't believe it. Isn't that right? I couldn't believe it. He set a really, really good example. Now, we've got 5 minutes. And the last one that I'll mention is one that we all knew, that I don't even really need to say anything, and that's Sister Perry. Here's some verses that I think of with Sister Perry. I'm glad Sister Linda's on the line, because she knows how we love Sister Perry, the memory of Sister Perry, the example of Sister Perry, her mother. Here's what I think of when I think of Sister Perry. Philippians 4, 11 through 13. I was just going to mention verse 11, but I'm going to mention the ones before it because I think of this. "Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned." Well, after 104 years, you do learn some things. "I have learned in whatsoever state I'm in, therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I'm instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need." And here's the one that describes Sister Perry. This is not the only one, but this is one that describes her. "I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me." She lived by that philosophy. Charles, your mother was so excited when she came to church one day. Sister Laura was so excited. She had celebrated her 83rd birthday, I think, and her family had given her a party. And she came to church that night, and she sat down next to Sister Perry, who's almost 100 years old. And she said, "Today was my birthday, and my family had a party for me, and I've had such a good time." And Sister Perry said, "Well, Laura, how old are you?" She said, "I'm 83 years old." Sister Perry said, "Why, Laura, I can't even remember when I was 83 years old." "I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me." Amen. Psalms chapter 100. "Enter into his gates with thanksgiving and enter his courts with praise and be thankful unto him and bless his name." And Colossians chapter 3, verse 15 reminds us that we are to be thankful. Sister Perry said, "I get up every day and I start thanking God for his blessings." Every day. Can you imagine? No wonder the Lord kept her around so long. He probably delighted in her getting up every day and praising him with a thankful heart. I said, "Sister Perry, how is it?" I said, "You always have such a wonderful, positive attitude." I said, "It's amazing. You've lost one leg. You've lost other parts of your body. You've lost a child. There's so many things against you. How is it that you can maintain such a positive attitude in every day?" And she said, "Brother Stephen, I learned a long time ago." She said that if I get my attitude right early in the morning, she says, everything else falls in place. That's a blessing. I don't always do it, but I learned it from Sister Perry. And I try. And even when things are down and when things look dark and gloomy and it looks like the end of the road, I remember that God is in charge. And the same God that provided for Sister Perry provides for you and I as well. He holds us up and he gives us strength as well. We ought to have a thankful heart. We ought to. Such a blessing. I'll wrap it up with this. Some of you were here. No, probably not many of you. Maybe not any of you were here when this happened. But you may remember me telling you about it. Brother Kilby might have been here. One day we get to church here at Mount Carmel. And I'm telling you, it was almost like it was staged. I didn't pick up on it for a few minutes. I came in with Brother Compton. And he was past 100. We get to church, we're the first ones here. Then Here comes the Dixons in their 90s. Then comes Sister Hayes, popping in here, full of energy. I mean, she was full of energy in her 90s. Then here comes the 80-year-olds, about 10, 22 or so. I mean, I know their ages are about, so it was as if it was planned and it was staged. The 100-year-old comes first. The 90-year-olds come in right after that. Then here comes the 80-year-olds. And then the 70-year-olds come in. And then everybody else comes in. And I thought to myself, no doubt it took a whole lot of effort for the 100-year-olds. I know it did for the 90-year-olds. Now, Elder Compton, it didn't take a lot for him, but the Dixons, it took a lot of effort. But it was kind of like this. Old Sister Reynolds. It was Elsie and Ethel Reynolds. He was the deacon at the church up at London Track. I went to see old Sister Reynolds. She was in her late 80s at the time. She said, "Brother Stephen, it's so hard for me to be able to go to church." She said, "I can't get up in the morning and get ready to go to church." She said, "So what I do is I start on the Monday before." She said, "I'll cook my casserole one day." She said, "I'll lay my clothes out another day." And she told all the things she did each day of the week so that when Sunday came, she'd be ready to go to... She didn't have to get ready to go to church. She was ready to go to church. And she'd been getting ready to go to church all week long. Those are some of the lessons that I've learned from 100-year-olds plus. Sister Dolan was almost there. She was 99 and almost there. She raised her great-granddaughters, never complained, buried all of her children, just never full of complaint. I see a consistency in those that God has blessed to cross my path that were past 100 years of age. They weren't filled with complaint. They had a strong constitution. They had a strong faith in God. They loved to serve God. They wanted to do something that made them feel like that they were still beneficial and being used in some capacity. I see those things. If I could be blessed like them, I'd like to be 100 years old. If I can't, if I lose my mind and I can't pick and choose, then I'm ready to go on and be with the Lord. But if I can be an encouragement and an example for somebody else that will help them in their life, what a great blessing that would be. I'm thankful that God has put these six, I know some more 100-year-olds, but these are the six that I know that some of them you know, that have made an impact upon my life. And I'm thankful that God put them in my life. May God bless you.